This sound was recorded on the 14th of May, 1963. Sitter, Mrs. Conacher, medium Leslie Flint.
Very well, thank you.
Your husband is here. He knew you was coming this morning. How's your book going?
Well, I think I have better news for you, Mickey.
Good.
Not that it's been published yet, but I had a very encouraging letter from Arthur Findlay, and he says he is most interested in my husband's book and would be pleased to write the foreword.
Oh, that's nice.
That's wonderful, isn't it?
Yes, he's read it, of course.
Oh, yes. Oh, really, Mickey, you're right on the spot.
And then what are you going to do? Are you going to get someone else to publish it? Because your husband's publishers wouldn't do it, would they?
Well, they were quite kind about it, but they didn't feel they could make it a commercial success, you see. However, I'll try other publishers. And Arthur Findlay seems to think it could be a great success. So I'm encouraged at last. Last time I came, I was very depressed.
Hello.
Hello, darling.
You're talking about the book.
Yes. Better news.
Good. What is that?
Well, Mr. Findlay.
You know about the preface.
Yes.
Oh, that.
Oh,
well, that's very kind of him to offer to write the preface. I think it's extremely kind of him.
Yes.
The thing is to get it published.
Oh, yes. Well, that will come later. I have just a few adjustments to make, darling. I've got to shorten some of your sentences.
Why? Why?
Oh, they're very long, you see.
Well, that's all right. What's wrong with that? It makes sense.
Oh, no. Well, I'm very pleased. I think it's awfully
but
kind of Arthur Findlay, don't you?
I do. I think it's most kind, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Who do you think... Who are you going to?
I don't know. When I go to...
Ryder?
Yes, do you know, I have Ryder in mind. How strange you should mention it.
I don't know why, but I feel as I'm speaking to you that Ryder's might be interesting.
Oh, how very interesting, darling. I have been thinking, yes.
The thing is to try and get it into the bookshops, because it's no good getting it published by a spiritist organization, because it just goes among those who already know. We want to reach the others.
Well, I don't know. With the name Arthur Findlay, it'll have a very wide appeal, and
yes.
He says he would like to know when it is published, so he will help me probably.
Good. Good. But I believe he's published all his books through one source, is he?
Oh, yes.
He hasn't suggested his own source.
No, he hasn't, but perhaps if Ryder's don't, I would ask him.
And Hutchinson? What about Hutchinson?
Yes, I don't know, darling. You know the publishers better than I do.
Well, they're two of the best, Ryder and Hutchinson.
Are they? Very well, I'll try
and
Ryder.
I should have thought Ryder. I don't know why, but I feel impressed that Ryder would be interested.
Yes.
And there's no harm in... Have you got more than one copy, or only the one?
Well, I can have another one made.
I think you should, because if one is ever lost, then everything's gone.
Oh, I've got the carbon copy.
Yes, but look at the business of making it all right.
Oh, yes.
I think it's a good idea always to have two copies in print. You know, I mean typed out.
Two typed, oh, I see.
A lot of work, yes, but you could have had a carbon copy.
Yes, I have got
a carbon.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's all right then. That's
yes.
All right. Did you do every bit of it yourself?
The typing?
I didn't think that you typed.
No, I had that done for me, darling.
Oh, I see.
A number of people did that for me.
I can't remember seeing you doing any typing.
No, I wouldn't have the brains for that.
You got plenty of brains. You always did say you hadn't got any, but you've got more brains than the average. Especially for some things.
Yes.
Well, what should we talk about?
Well, I've come with an open mind, darling. You can tell me anything. I should be interested. I loved listening to you on Earth. And
what about
I love listening to you now. Oh, darling, I don't know. That's we had a little of that last week, and...
And what?
Well...
You're not keen on the idea.
Well, you... Oh, yes, but you told me a certain amount, so... Well, unless... Whatever you like, dear, what have you been doing particularly? Are you studying anything specially?
Yes, I am. I think I told you I was very interested in music.
Oh, yes, that amazes me.
Yes, I know it does. Mm. I suppose in a way it would amaze you, and yet in a way I should have thought not, because I was always appreciative of the
yes,
arts.
Yes. And you used to sing rather nicely.
Now I'm able to delve into everything. Study anything that I like, anything that I want to know about, I can find out. We have the most marvellous libraries here. I wish you could, because books mean so much to me.
Yes, they
and
always
books,
do.
Books, books. You know, I should imagine every book of any consequence, of any real value, is here.
Really?
Yes. And in every language, for those, for instance, who, when they first come here, that is, they consider language as an important thing, and they can consider it necessary to vibrate the atmosphere and create sound as to make speech, because they have not yet advanced sufficiently to realize that thoughts in themselves are quite adequate. We don't need to vibrate the atmosphere, we don't need to be able to convey our thoughts by speech, but for those when they first come, where it's a natural common thing to do those things, you see, the average person when they come here carries on to a great extent, very much the same. When I say carries on, I don't mean that the worser self is very apparent. It's there, dormant, no doubt, but because a person doesn't suddenly become a changed person. But the ordinary things, like speaking, desiring to read books, desiring to sing, that is, to create sound by the voices singing, playing a piano, for instance, it is a real piano to all outward appearances. Buildings are as real and as solid and are constructed and made, and everyone here has a kind of work that appeals to them. An artist still creates and so on. But as you progress, that is, you become more familiar with the higher aspects of thought and life, so you gradually change and you see differently, and in consequence many of the things you thought were vital and necessary and important are no longer so. So as you progress, you find that it's not necessary to read a book. You can tune in, as it were, mentally to the author.
Yes.
And any of the works of that author can become conscious thoughts, and you can sort of picturize them too. I wish I could explain this, but it's very evolved.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
Can you, for instance, read Arthur Finlay's books over there?
Of course. One can read any book of any consequence as you may want to read. Mm. But there again, it depends on what sphere or plane you happen to be as to what you read. The more highly progressed, obviously, read books of a much higher nature, a much higher content, spiritual content. But those on the earthly spheres or lower spheres near the earth read the sort of thing, for instance, if you like, that sort of fiction.
Do they really? Hmm. Oh, you must enjoy being amongst the books, darling.
Another thing which probably has never struck you, probably has never struck anyone, and I think it would be very interesting to incorporate in a book this, and that is that an author who creates characters which are very real, very alive, which have been the book has been read by untold numbers of people, it takes on a form of life of its own. Now,
does
you take
it?
Dickens.
Yes.
Now, for 100 years, I suppose, nearly, people have been reading Dickens, and his characters have become so vitalized by the power of the thought force of the innumerable millions that have read his works, that these characters have a form of life. They have a form of existence. They're not like ordinary people. For instance, they cannot step anywhere outside the experiences that have been written down in a book. Neither can they be in any way different to what the author conceived them to be and what the reading public has accepted them to be. copy or made them to be. In other words, there is a form of life which is creative by the individuals concerned, such as by an author. An author creates characters, and though those characters are not human beings in the sense that they have a soul, they have an astral. An astral sort of shape and an astral kind of life. But as soon, for instance, as the books become less and less read and the characters become less, in consequence, important, in other words, as the interest flags in them, so gradually they cease to exist. Can you understand that?
Yes, I can, really. Yes, it's very, very interesting, darling.
You see, what one must remember and realize is that the power of thought is the creative part of man. It is the only part of man, indeed, that you might say, that has any chance of survival. I mean, we all know that a human being has a soul, he has a spiritual counterpart, he has an astral or spiritual body. Actually, the astral body and the spiritual body really, in a sense, are one, although there is a difference inasmuch that as the personality progresses, so the astral body changes and becomes more spiritualized. I wish one could find ways in explaining this, because it's a point which I think is very important for people to understand, that we do have this spiritual body, which is the house of the what we call the soul. But the whole point is that a person is no more or less than their thought force. It is the very thought force behind all life that is creative. It is, without it, there could be no life, there could be no existence. The only thing that a person can bring from your world is what they themselves have created within themselves and, to some extent, without themselves or outside themselves. You see, we ourselves grow by experience, by knowledge, and we become, in consequence, individuals, inasmuch that we become separate entities. But even though we are separate entities, we are still part, obviously, of the whole. We are still part of each other. We can never really, in a sense, be separated, although we retain outward shape and form, although we retain our personality or our character or individuality. At the same time, the more we progress, the more we are conscious of others, and the more we become part of others. And although we ourselves may be creative in various ways, all the time we are being creative, we are also assisting others, sometimes even unconsciously in the early stages. But nevertheless, we are all contributing one to another. We're all part of one to another.
Yes, yes, of course. Darling, I wondered if you'd had anything to do with children on your side.
Oh, yes, I have quite a lot to do with young people.
You are very popular with
and
children.
I'm very fond of children, and I do teach. I teach various things, subjects to various children according to their age group.
What subjects?
All manner of subjects. Mm-hmm. I'd be surprised. I teach a lot about nature.
Do you? Yes, you would.
Love nature, and I love everything about the countryside. Mm-hmm. And I teach a great deal. Because over here, we have everything in replica. Whereas yours, in a sense, is the reality while you're on Earth. To us, it is not the reality. You are seeing, it's exactly the same. I mean, for instance, you see a tree which you may admire, but that tree is only the outward shape of the spiritual aspect. In other words, over here, that tree continues to exist and live. It has its being. It has life. All life, or everything that has life on your side, has life here. But the lower forms of life, such as, shall we say, reptiles and insects and so on, which are common in your world, they do not exist in the same shape or form on the higher planes. They all go through stages of evolution.
Yes, I see.
You see, what one must remember about all life, and I don't just mean human beings, I mean nature, the animal kingdom and so on, are all in stages. phases of evolution. They're all in the process of change. If you could see certain, in fact, of course, we know, I mean, you know, everyone knows, that certain early forms of life no longer exist in your world. They have, I suppose you could say, played themselves out. It isn't exactly quite that, but the point is that time, for one thing, is so unimportant. It seems important to you while you're living in your world, and a year may seem a long time, and 1,000 years may seem eternity, but there is no such thing as time. And in the evolution of life, there are many, many changes taking place. Man has changed considerably. If man could see himself as he was 2,000 years ago, there are quite considerable changes. I don't mean so much in the construction of his body, although there are subtle changes even there. If one could go back even much further, you would notice them particularly. In other words, what I'm trying to convey is that the Earth world has been going on for untold generations upon generations of time, millions and billions of years, and the Earth has changed. The whole face of the Earth has changed considerably over the centuries, and people have changed, and the life has changed, and all the various forms of existence and life have altered. And yes, if you can realize that is still going on here, but in a higher sense, in a better form, all the grossness and all the ugliness and all the things which cause distress and unhappiness, as one evolves, fall away from one.
Yes, that must be very... It must be difficult at first to adjust oneself to a timeless world, isn't it?
The whole point is this, that when you first come here, you, in a sense, you notice change, obviously, because there must be change, but it's so subtle. You find yourself in a world which is as real to you as the world you've just left. You find people around and about you that you've known, who've gone before you, who are there to make you happy and comfortable and to see that you have everything that you need. Of course, there are instances of some people who, for some reason or other, have still carried over very strong material thoughts, and they live in a condition where they are constantly in need of attention and help, and they have a world which is so real, and it is a real world to them, that it seems so like the world they've left, only without all the defects, if one can put it like that, because here you have the beauty of the countryside, the lakes and the forests, you have the houses of all manner of type of house, I mean you have the small country cottages, and you have mansions, and you have castles. In fact, you have every type of building that you conceive of. But to a certain extent, people here evolve according to their needs and their wants, and it's so slow in its process that it's unperceived, it's hardly noticed by the individuals concerned. I think the first thing that happens to a person is to be made to feel at home, made to feel that they are at peace.
Yes.
Of course, mind you, we have to admit the fact there are a good many people who come who are far from being at home and far from being at peace, because their mind is so cluttered with material thoughts and things that they, in a sense, become much more earthbound. They're much more conscious, indeed, of the things still going on Earth. And that's where you do get not only hauntings, but you do get people who are making themselves, in a sense, a nuisance.
Yes, that's very, very interesting.
You see, well, it all depends so much on the individual. The more a person can progress spiritually while on Earth, the better it is. And that's one of the main reasons why, of course, we are so anxious to make this contact and to advise and to educate people, help people, not only just to bring comfort in the time of loss, but to make people conscious of the power within themselves, so that while they're on Earth, they can overcome a lot of the worser things within self. In other words, so that they can prepare gradually through change, a process of change in their character and outlook and so on, so that when they do come here, they will go into a state of being which is a good one. I mean, they won't be so near the Earth, because the nearer you are to the Earth, in other words, the more you are on conscious you are, obviously, of earthly things and earthly conditions, and the greater the difficulty it is to break with those things. Because one of the things one must obviously learn sooner or later is to make the break with the earth. Because yes. While the earth pulls, it is detrimental to progress.
Yes.
This is, of course, vastly different to occasionally coming back and speaking to someone that you love and comforting them and helping them and guiding them as best you can. Or, as in the case of some of the highly evolved souls who deliberately choose to come back in that capacity as advisors and guides.
Yes.
That's an entirely different thing.
I suppose children would accept the change rather more readily, would they?
I think children, of course, obviously do. I mean, they are much more easily accommodated. They're much more able to settle in their new existence.
And they're all taken care of.
Everybody.
Yes.
No one need fear the process of dying. One may fear the condition of one's death, the illness and so on, but the actual process of dying is a remarkable thing. It's a if only people could realize, it's a tremendous adventure.
Yes.
It's mm-hmm. like going to sleep in one world, waking up in another, much more beautiful, with all your friends that have gone before, waiting to greet you, fussing round you, doing everything they can to make you happy and comfortable, and taking you out and introducing you to friends and to places. And in other words, it's a tremendous adventure.
It sounds very matey, darling.
Of course it is.
Yes.
No one need fear dying unless, no. of course, they themselves have been so utterly dreadful, you see.
Yes, so when I come over, I should like to win my spurs, looking after children who've had a very raw deal here. Would that be possible?
Of course it would be possible. If that's what you would want to do,
you'd
be allowed to do it.
Yes.
You'd be helped to do it.
Good.
Everyone here has advised and helped to do the kind of thing or work that interests them, that they feel disposed to do, in which they can best serve. No one for any length of time just wants to idle themselves here.
Yeah.
Everyone is given the opportunity to serve and to work. Some, of course, when they first come, need rest. Some have still got the marks, you might say, of illness. I don't mean to say they suffer. But the point is that we must always remember this, that the mental side of life is a very vital, a very important one. In fact, it is, in a sense, the most important.
Yes.
And if you come here with a strong consciousness of certain things of the earth, they continue for a while until you realize that they no longer exist only in your mind, in your imagination, as it were.
Yes.
You've got to learn to cast from yourself the worser aspects and develop the good. And accept the opportunities presented. Of course, you do get some of very difficult customers.
Yes. How's Mother, darling?
Very well and very happy.
You see her quite often, do you?
Quite often.
Good.
She sends all her love and her blessings to you.
And your mother?
Yes. You know, when I come and talk to you, it's not just only I.
No.
They're all around.
Yes. And are my guides here today?
Yes, they're all present.
Good.
But you know, latterly, I think it's partly because of the book. They've always made it so that I do all speaking.
Yes.
But I think you understand
that. Oh, of course.
That.
Naturally, it's
After
your
all,
book, dear.
It is my book, isn't it?
It is. But I would sometime like to hear my Egyptian.
Well,
do you
no
think
doubt.
Perhaps he can't speak.
He'll come and talk to you. Because there again, we have to explain this, but there again, for instance, if, as I do, I come and speak, I'm on a rather different vibration.
Yes, I
and
see.
And then for him to come through, it means changing the whole vibration.
Oh, yes, well then,
and,
that's
therefore
right.
It may well be that should you come one time, he may come and I may not.
Yes, I see, yes.
But I don't think if I don't that it's because I don't want to. It's merely because I've given up the sitting, as you call it, to him.
Yes, I see.
Well, there's another funny thing. Why do they call this business sitting? I think you're an artist and you were posing for a portrait.
Yes.
Often hear people refer to sitting.
Your voice is very good today,
isn't
darling.
It?
It's absolutely natural.
Is it? Well, I like to feel it's natural.
I suppose your father's not here today.
Yes, he is.
Is he? Well, he usually gives you that tinge of Scotch.
Yes, well, actually, I know it has happened. There have been times when his influence has been very strong, and I've gone back to the Scottish.
Yes.
But not now.
No.
I think I've learned to assert myself more, you know.
Yes.
I think the whole art of this communication business is to assert yourself, assert your personality. The more you can assert your personality, the more typical the voice is, you know, in consequence.
Yes.
It's a very strange thing altogether when you come to think about it, because actually I think of what I wish to convey to you, and the voice box reconstructs the voice artificially. In other words, my thoughts impinging themselves, coming to you through the voice box as sound. It's a very complicated thing to explain and probably impossible to understand.
Are you confined in any way, darling, in the voice box?
Yes, to a great extent. When one is working within the range, as it were, of the etheric voice box, which is built around by the medium through an esoteric emanation, and it must be within the range of the medium, because once it begins to get beyond that, it disintegrates. It always has to be kept into the medium's range.
Yes.
And it's a very difficult thing to keep it going for any length of time.
Yes.
Because all the time the power's fluctuating, and sometimes even before you realize it, the whole thing has begun to disintegrate, and that means we can't continue.
Well, I think you're a marvellous communicator, darling.
I don't do too badly, do I?
You do very well indeed, darling. And I do thank you for all
you... I do hope the book's going to be a success, and I hope it'll be out this autumn for the winter sales. That's the time to get it out, you know, get it ready for the Christmas sales.
Yes, you're very practical, darling. Well, it'll take me another 2 or 3 weeks now to get it.
I must go, but all my love and bless you.
All my love to you, dear.
Leave everything to me. I look after you.
Very well. Well, you might look in and thank Arthur Findlay, will you?
I certainly will.
Stansted Hall.
I certainly will.
Thank you, dear.
He seems a very charming man.
He is.
God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Auntie.
Goodbye, Mickey.
Bye-bye, Auntie.
Goodbye. I've nearly got my name. That's the first time. Ara, Mickey is my name.
Pardon?
Ara.
Ara?
You call it Ara. It does start with an E, but it's really...
Is it Irish?
I don't know, really. No, I think it's
Well, anyway, I think Ira's all right. Ina's nicer. Bye-bye.